everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Nitro Beard Power Hour. I'm your host, Mr. Wes Gardner. Sorry that I missed last week. Had a terrible, flu, cold combo. Excuse me, still not completely over it. But, I was just hoping it was a 48-hour bug. And now I'm going on 2 weeks. It's rough. Just 102-degree fever and bad heat rashes. I don't know what the fuck it is. I guess it's some zombie virus. I don't know. But I'm still kicking. I'm still here. Still going at it. And you know what? We missed the show last week, but this week is absolutely going to make up for it. We got some huge news. The PS4 was announced. I went to a WWE house show where The Undertaker returned. I'm going to be talking about something I bought with my tax return money and a little shout-out nostalgia fest for, in my opinion, one of my favorite systems, and that might surprise you whenever you hear what it is. But let's get things started. First, before we get going, I don't know if you guys caught the UFC fight, UFC 157, Ronda Rousey versus, oh God, what's her name? The woman that lost. Carmouche, I think her name is. The Marine. It was a hell of a pay-per-view. And the first UFC women's title defense. It was the main event. It was a historic evening. It was awesome. You had Dan Henderson versus Lyoto Machida. All sorts of stuff. If you didn't watch that, I know I don't talk UFC a whole lot on here, but it's because I haven't watched it in a while. But actually watched UFC 157. There was a lot of hype around it, and it delivered. It was an awesome show. And Joe Rogan is probably the best play-by-play man in the business, in any business, in my opinion. He's as good as Jim Ross was in pro wrestling, if we want to take it back to that. But big shout-out to Ronda Rousey for winning the UFC Women's Championship. Let's see, Oh, I'm still feeling weird. I got like Bayer, and they sell this little bottle of basically it's Mucinex, but you know whenever I first got sick, I was like, what am I gonna get? I'm gonna get some Theraflu. Theraflu's always worked. Theraflu and Robitussin are the two medicines that no matter what you're sick with, that will cure it, whatever it is. So we go to the store to get Theraflu. This is like 4 days after I get sick, because I was bedridden for at least two of those days. And went in there, and apparently they did a nationwide recall on Theraflu, which is crazy. My argument, to my fiance was the reason why they pulled it is because it works. they don't want the good shit just being able to buy it, just walking into a store and buy it. But got this little Walmart brand, Mucinex. It has like dextromethorphan, acetaminophen, and all that good stuff in it. And that shit, oh man, it's like a cocktail. It's not quite as good as Theraflu, but it worked. It absolutely worked. The only thing was a little tiny bottle, and I'm talking a little bottle, like the size of like a multivitamin thing, was like $21. Ridiculous. Outrageous. But hey, it worked. I got a kid. Can't be sick all the time. Have to be a dad. So had to get better. And I'm getting there. I'm still not 100%. I'm right around 89%, 90% better. But feeling good. Definitely feeling good enough to do the show today. But yeah, we got your questions too. I forgot to mention that. We have some great questions. Talking all about Undertaker, what my thoughts would be on Metroid, doing a Metroid reboot, stuff like that. But how we're going to open the show is we are going to talk about one of my favorite systems ever. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. I'm going to tell you why you guys should like this system. If you do, good on you. If not, you're a hater, and I'll tell you why right after this. Welcome back, guys. So I got my tax return money, you know, pretty sizable little chunk of change. And this is the first year that I've ever saved, like literally put it all into a savings account. I just took out some stuff to get some more protein, some stuff for the weightlifting, and some stuff like medicine just to get to feeling better. But I was like, okay, I'm going to do my one purchase to where it's just about me. You know, every tax return season, I do that one purchase. Back whenever I was a bachelor, that one purchase could be a new high-def TV. It could be a new, you know, $500 PC. It could be a video game system, you know, something like that. It could be a big, big purchase. But now I want to save it. You know, got the baby. Have more than just me to think about. But I decided I wanted to get one of my favorite systems from back in the day because I thought about it, and I have a lot of games for the system. You know, I have a lot of digital versions of games for the system off of the PlayStation Network, and that system is the original PSP, the PlayStation Portable. And if you ask the internet, if you go on NeoGAF, if you go really anywhere where kind of internet cynicism is out in full force, they're going to tell you that the PSP was a terrible system. Oh, it was a terrible system, didn't have a whole lot of games. Hell, it's in the name, PlayStation Portable. All it was ports from, you know, other handhelds or, you know, other properties. And who wants to play Killzone Liberation on their fucking PSP? You know, you're going to hear a lot of that. Oh, well, yeah, the games were okay, but, you know, if you go handheld gaming, it's Nintendo or nothing. And, you know, sure, if you look at sales, of course, Nintendo destroyed. Nintendo's always destroyed in the handheld market. But for some reason, the PSP is, I don't know, it's like a diamond in the rough. Because Sony's made terrible decisions. Sony's notorious for making terrible decisions. This goes all the way back from marketing to fucking, backwards compatibility fiascos. PSN getting hacked and credit cards getting released. You know, stuff like just shit luck with Sony, right? But, excuse me, I'm going to take a drink of Gatorade real quick. But you have to think. Of course, a video game system is all about the games, right? No matter what system you buy, no matter if it's a big giant system you're playing on your TV, no matter if it's a 360, PS3, Wii U, whatever you're playing, or whether it's a handheld, whether it's on your phone, if you're having fun with the games, what's the fucking point what you're playing it on, right? And that's my argument for the PSP. The PSP has given me better handheld gaming experiences than anything on a Nintendo system. And that's not troll bait. That's not, oh, System Wars. Ooh, Sony's the best, guys. Ho, for the win, internets. None of that shit. It's just my favorite handheld games have come from the PlayStation Portable. You have Tactics Ogre, Let Us Cling Together, which might be the best handheld strategy game. Hell, one of the best strategy games I've ever played. Fuck handheld. Just period. One of the best strategy games I have ever played. I'll put it up there with Civ. I'll put it up there with Alpha Centauri. I'll put it up there with Final Fantasy Tactics, which, by the way, Final Fantasy Tactics War of the Lions on PSP. I love Persona 3 Portable. I got Final Fantasy IV Complete Collection. God, there's so much stuff. All the Monster Hunters, God's Eater Burst, Crisis Core, the amazing Final Fantasy VII game that focused on Zack. Remarkable games, and that's pretty much just sticking with the RPG/strategy stuff. That's not even going out and saying, oh, the platformers. You have your Ratchet and Clank, Secret Agent Clank or whatever. You have Daxter. You have Siphon Filter, Dark Mirror, which was really good. The SOCOM games weren't, you know, they weren't the hottest games, I'll admit. But, you know, there was some cool stuff on there. Killzone Liberation was pretty rad. You had a good Twisted Metal. Twisted Metal Head-On was really good. I mean, just some solid games. And these are games that I would recommend no matter what system they were on. I don't care if they're on the Nintendo system. I don't care if they're on the Xbox. Those games are great. They're good for a PSP game. They're great games. And PSP, I realize, is one of my favorites. As hell, I was just playing Phantasy Star Portable earlier today. You'll love those games. Still trying to get into Monster Hunter. Not quite on the Monster Hunter bandwagon. which is weird, right? Because if you know me, if you listen to the show, you know I'm a huge fan of MMOs. You know I'm a huge fan of games where you grind, where you do repetition, all this other stuff, and that's like Monster Hunter's forte. But for some reason I can't get in it. I don't know. Am I missing something? Like, let me know in the comments, or let me know on Twitter about Monster Hunter. What are your thoughts on Monster Hunter? Because I love this, you know, I love series like that. Like, I love, God's Eaters is a great game. It's basically Monster Hunter, but instead of kind of the, I don't know, Caribbean slash Nordic lore type stuff that they're building, it's, like science fiction, you know, guns, swords, things like that. Kind of more, I guess more Final Fantasy-ish, if you wanna, how Final Fantasy has that cool cyber steampunk thing going on. Like, you know, Final Fantasy 8 or 7 or something like that. Kind of geared more towards that. More of a Phantasy Star style. But God's Eater's a great game. Just really good games. And there's games on there that, you know, of course you can put your PS1 classics on there if you have a PS3. Like, Front Mission 3 is on mine right now. You can, Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9 I could put on there. Just a good system all around. And just stop all the hate about, just about different systems, man. The system wars mentality has got to go. It has got to go. I understand people get upset. Oh, I spent $300 on this machine, therefore it is the best machine, and anyone who disagrees with me. You know, people just get this weird Stockholm syndrome where they're hostages based on what they bought. And that goes for everything. That's silly. I mean, you see it in everything, right? Are you a Coke or a Pepsi guy? Are you Ford or Chevy? You know, everyone tries to identify with the shit that they buy, and it's weird. How about the people that get upset about what video game systems people buy, about what games they play? How about you stop? Well, yeah, one, how about you stop? But how about you get a personality? You know, how about you not let video games define who you are, and then roll with it? You know, and I have a question about something like this later on, and I'll really open the floodgates then. But, you know, PSP, awesome system. I love it. Love it. It's a good system. But in Sony news, I also wanted to talk about the reveal of the PlayStation 4. And I will say that the press conference was really good. It was really well paced, showed, a few new IPs, got people like Jonathan Blow up there. I know, you know, the games he's making aren't necessarily exclusives. Well, maybe his are. I know he said something about early releases and things like that. But, you know, they showed new Killzone. I just wish people would remember that Killzone wasn't very fun to play. It looks beautiful, don't get me wrong, but, you know, it is what it is. It's just a graphic powerhouse to show off the power of it. But there was that one game, it's kind of a character-driven action game made by Sony, and it really reminded me of the PS1 as far as kind of that imagination and, you know, mascot driven, you know, gameplay and platforming, and had a lot of really cool particle effects and things. But I think the biggest news to come out of that, at least for me, is Blizzard went up there and talked about releasing Diablo 3 on PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4, which is a pretty big deal. I have a few opinions on why they're doing that, but I also have a question later on that I'm going to get to. Do I think it's a good fit? Do I think it's something that's going to work out in Blizzard's benefit? So in the question and answers, I'm going to answer that, but I thought it was a big deal, right? Blizzard hasn't released a console game since, I think, StarCraft 64. And that was sanctioned by a third party. They licensed it, but they sanctioned it out to a third party, so it wasn't even really them developing it. But just a lot of big stuff to come from there. And just a all-around good show. I know there's a lot of people online that talked about, well, they didn't show what the system looked like. They didn't give us any prices. They didn't do all this. They showed us all the games, but then they did not give a price, which is silly because E3 is right around the corner. Game Developers Conference is right around the corner. Tokyo Game Show is later this fall. We're going to get a price. That's all there is to it. They're going to announce it. I think they're taking a page out of Nintendo's book with Nintendo Direct, just skipping the press, just making their own event. That way they control the message. And it worked. I thought it was really good. It was really well done. It was paced very well. And I think it worked in their benefit. But you can't please everyone. You know, there's going to be some people out there that want more. And then, of course, now there's people talking about just the internal specs of the system. And that's another one of the questions we'll get to. But, you know, oh, it has this type of RAM. It has this motherboard. That means it's going to be the best. And, like, I don't get that. I never understood that mentality. Ever. But, yeah, PS4 reveal. Guess it's a big deal. I'm at this weird burnout phase of home consoles and things like that to where, I don't know, I'm probably going to... I won't say I'll skip the whole generation because generations last 10 years now. But I'm not going to get one at launch. No, I kind of got... You know, I got my old 40 gig PS3, the big bulky one, still kicking, luckily. It's still kicking, you know, just hanging out. But now the new slimline ones, they re-discs better and all this other stuff. So I'm thinking I'm just going to wait on the PS4 till they do a few price drops, make the slimline version, do a bundle pack in. You know, I'll eventually get there. Same thing with the Xbox. Probably same thing with the Wii U. I'm going to wait. I'm just going to pace it. You know, they're not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. We're going to live a long time. But yeah, that's about it for gaming news. If you've never played a PSP, I urge you to go find one, play one of your friends, do something like that. Find it on Amazon. You can probably find them for like $70. It's well worth it. A lot of awesome games. I'm not even a big portable guy. I don't take games with me. You know, if I'm out and about at the store or something, I'm usually doing something. They're great just to kick back and, you know, sit in the bed and play portable games. It's a lot of fun. But anyways, we will be right back. We got the wrestling wrap-up. Going to talk about my predictions on Raw. But we're also going to cover the house show where The Undertaker returned. Huge. This could be big as far as the year for professional wrestling is concerned. But anyways, we'll cover that right when we come back. Welcome back. Big weeks lately on professional wrestling. There's been a lot of crazy stuff going on. First off, though, I want to talk to you guys about the house show I went to right here in Waco, Texas. And, you know, I've been to live events before. I've been to Monday Night Raw. I'm gonna preface this with saying, I've been to Rolling Stones concerts, I've been to Ozzy Osbourne, I've been all sorts of places. And the ovation for, Undertaker was the loudest thing I've heard in my entire life. Because that was a true shock. No one knew, you know, he literally hasn't been heard from since July, I think. In Raw 1000. So nobody knew. Nobody knew. You know, he's from Texas. But nobody knew. But anyway, let me cover the whole night. I'll just cover the entire night. Let's see. The opening match was Tamina Snuka and Oksana versus Caitlyn and Layla. And, you know, getting divas in there. It was a good match. Tamina Snuka and Oksana play the heels very well. And they're also a very good tag team. I don't know if it's just a house show and you're just allowed to do more. You know, since it's not on tape, you don't have to stick to a strict character. But Tamina Snuka and Oksana played amazing heels. They came out, they were ripping people's signs. They were cussing at people. They were just going crazy. Especially Oksana. She was on the side of the ropes whenever she wasn't tagged in and just mocking people. It was hilarious. But they're a great tag team. But of course, Caitlyn and Layla won. You know, good guys got to win at a house show, I guess. But, yeah, good to see the ladies, the divas, show up. Next up, Miz came out, and I wanted to rush the ring because I hate The Miz. You know, I met The Miz. Well, I wouldn't say I met The Miz, but I saw The Miz after Raw last year whenever they were In-N-Out Burger with Dolph Ziggler and Christian. Me and the fiance were like, "Hey, guys, great job tonight," you know. Dolph Ziggler was like, "Thanks, man." Christian gave a thumbs up because he had his mouth full. And The Miz did this, like, rolling eyes. Oh, God. Ugh. So fuck The Miz. Fuck you, Miz. That's right, I said it. But he came out and he was like, "Oh, hey, guys, you know, this is a show you're going to talk about for years. All this stuff. Are you guys having a lot of fun here in Waco, Texas?" You know, trying to get a cheap crowd pop. And I didn't think anything of it. But I distinctly remember him saying, you know, "This is a match, or this is a night that a lot of people will talk about for years to come." And I thought it was just an empty thing. You know how you hype the crowd up. You just say whatever. So he says that, and, you know, Miz leaves. He does a little Miz TV. Then Jack Swagger with Zeb Coulter comes out, which me and the fiancé were pretty stunned because Jack Swagger, I don't know if you guys heard this. You probably have, but he got caught DUI with possession of marijuana, and that could be a suspension. And that could literally affect not only just his WrestleMania appearance, but that could affect his entire career. He could get shit canned for something like that. But even more so, whenever you think Dutch Mantel, you know, who's Zeb Coulter, Dutch Mantel's granddaughter died in a drunk driving accident. So come on, Jack, don't make dumb decisions, man. Come on. Ugh. That's just rough. But he fought Jack Swagger fought Sin Cara. Decent little match. Sin Cara basically he lost. Sin Cara lost to an ankle lock or Patriot Act or whatever Jack Swagger calls his ankle lock. And the next match was pretty funny. It was Ted DiBiase Jr. versus Fandango. I don't know if you guys know those shitty things of the salsa dancer, and he just goes, "Fandango." But he was there, and he has a hell of a finisher. It's like a modified stunner. He does like a salsa dancing deal. He spins you, and then grabs you, and then takes you kind of down for a stunner. It's a pretty cool move. I'm not going to lie, it's a pretty good finisher. But he was a heel, so whenever he premieres on TV, he'll probably be a bad guy. Just salsa dancing and all that good stuff. But Ted DiBiase played up the crowd, like he always does. He's a good guy. He was getting a lot of cheers. The next match actually surprised me, and it might be considered actual wrestling match of the night, was Randy Orton versus Cody Rhodes. And Cody Rhodes cut a funny promo before he came out, and he talked about how Waco wasn't distinguished enough to grow a mustache and all this other stuff. So it was pretty good. Pretty good way to get some heat. But and I'm not a big Randy Orton fan. I personally think he just wastes a lot of time. Especially on TV, he really doesn't have a character. He just kind of stands there and people cheer him for some reason. I don't know. But I will tell you, at the house show, he worked his ass off. He did. That was a great match. Everyone was getting into it near the end of it. Match ended with a mid-air RKO from the top rope. I mean, they pulled out some punches, and they made it a match. It was like a 30-minute match. It was good. A lot of technical stuff, too. A lot of, I thought I'd never see Randy Orton do a head scissors takedown, but he did one. Did a head scissors takedown, did pump handle slam, did a lot of stuff I haven't seen Randy Orton do. And I think that's part of the appeal of a house show, right? Is you get to see these superstars in a much different light, because they're not bound by specific things. They have to be on TV. You only have 6 minutes to do this. You know, you can kind of relax. You can, you know, you know, loosen the tie a little bit. You can get in it. You can really be a part of the experience, be there with the fans. And, you know, and after the match, you know, Randy Orton won. After the match, Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton both circled the ring and high five and sign and stuff. Yeah, it was pretty cool. The next match was Great Khali and Brodus Clay versus Epico and Primo. It was a pretty funny match. And I will tell you, holy shit, Great Khali is huge. Oh my god. Seeing them on TV and seeing them dwarf people on TV is one thing, but whenever you're on the same eye level, you know, or whenever you're on the same foot level, I should say, whenever you're standing on the same ground Great Khali is, and you have to fucking look up, he's the size of a house, you know? Huge. And I mean, he's bigger than Big Show is. Big Show's a big old boy. You know? But that was a good match. Great Khali and Brodus Clay won it. Great Khali did, like, a few leg drops and stuff. A lot of stuff I haven't seen him do either. I was kind of worried, because he's just too big to be doing stuff like that. But Epico and Primo really played it up, going in there and getting knife-handed and all that stuff from Great Khali. And I think it ended with Rosa Mendez going in there and one of the Funkadactyls. One of the Funkadactyls, that's right, she did an enziguri. She did a good enziguri, too. Like, she did a Tajiri-style enziguri, where she ran up Rosa Mendez's, like, leg, and then, like, just kicked her right in the back, like the same type of smack you hear from Alberto Del Rio's foot. It's like, you could just hear it echo, and everyone was like, oh, shit. And Rosa Mendez just fell over. But, yeah, I think Brodus Clay got the pin after he did his body splash. But pretty good match. It was like 10 minutes long. And then here was the highlight of the night. It started as a 2-on-1 handicap match with Sheamus versus Wade Barrett and Damian Sandow. And Wade Barrett and Damian Sandow were in the ring with Sheamus, and, you know, Wade Barrett takes the mic, and he's like, oh, you bit off a lot more than you could chew, buddy. Like, you know, it's 2-on-1 tonight, you know, how surprised do you feel? And then Sheamus went on, and he was like, oh, arse, fella, I'll kick your arse. Whatever Sheamus does. But Sheamus was like, oh, if you think you got a surprise, I got a surprise of my own. And the lights shut off. And the first thing, you know, you know, me and Vanessa are really big fans of The Shield. You know, Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. All three of them have a huge future in that company. So we're like, oh shit, we get to see The Shield. And then the gong hit. And brother, let me tell you, I remember exactly what I did. I yelled, what the fuck? Like, I thought they were kidding for a second. And everyone stood up, and they're, oh, I'll never forget it. I was literally seated up in a box seat, and I could see directly down the front of the ramp. The lights went off, the gong hit, the place fucking exploded. Like I said, I've never heard an ovation like this, ever. There was only like 4,000 of us in that room, but that was louder than any Ozzy concert, the Rolling Stones. I mean, I've seen a ton of I've seen over 30, 40 concerts, and I've heard nothing like whenever I heard Taker come in that building. And he walked in, and it was like royalty. There was a different feeling in the air, and I'm not just trying to be dramatic. It really was. There was some sense of like, this is a Hall of Famer. Like, this is a guy who defined this business. So everyone stood up during his entire entrance. He made his way to the ring. Everyone started chanting, this was awesome, holy shit, Undertaker, all these different chants coming from all different directions. But God, I will never forget that pop. That was like an Attitude Era Stone Cold Steve Austin pop. And there's a video, I think, on WWE's Tout of it. And you gotta remember whenever you watch that, there's only like 4,000 people in that room. And it was a complete surprise. Nobody saw it coming. And then the match started, you know, Undertaker was Sheamus' partner, and it just turned into a tag team match. Undertaker was a little ginger. You know, if you guys don't know, he had a shoulder replacement surgery, and he had hip surgery. So not only did he have lower body stuff, but he had upper body stuff done. So it takes a while to recover from that. And he came out, and he was doing some pretty good bumps. I'm not gonna lie, he even went to the top rope. He did the top rope arm. Oh God, what's it called? Oh, I can't think of it. I think it's called old school, actually. But did that, and I was kind of worried, because I was like, no, Taker, don't go top. You don't got to prove anything to us, Taker. Just calm down. But did that, ended with a bro kick to chokeslam, then to tombstone on Damian Sandow. It was a good match. Sheamus took a majority of the big bumps from Wade Barrett and Damian Sandow, of course. There was a few funny times when Damian Sandow would get mouthy at Taker, and at one point Taker just went off the apron whenever, you know, he was the man out, but he went off the apron and just grabbed a chair and just ambushed, and everyone fucking split. Everyone split, and everyone started laughing. Then we started chanting, "This is awesome," because it was awesome. But yeah, the return of The Undertaker. Man, I'm stunned that I was part of that. He was on my bucket list. I had this weird thing as a kid, kind of a bucket list of WWE, or not of WWE, but just of wrestlers that I wanted to see perform before I die. And there was three people still left on that list. There was Undertaker, there was Mick Foley, and there was Sting. And Undertaker, just saw Undertaker, and saw him at a house show, no less. Fucking sick. Like, it's, oh, so good. I'm still stoked by it. I went to bed giddy last night, just giant smile on my face, because, oh, man, that whole night was made when that gong hit, and that place fucking erupted. But yeah, the only two people left on my list. I think I'll actually add another third one. I want to see Samoa Joe fight. I'm getting more and more of a Samoa Joe fan, and he has as many, you know, 4-star matches as got some of the greats. I don't know if he has as many 4-stars as Shawn Michaels, but it's close. But yeah, I'd say Samoa Joe, Sting, and Mick Foley are the people I'd like to see. Undertaker and Sheamus win via Tombstone. And then the main event was Alberto Del Rio versus The Big Show in a no disqualification match for the World Heavyweight title. Of course, Alberto Del Rio won. They're not going to give Big Show the belt at a house show. It's not going to happen. But the match was great. They had a lot of kendo sticks. They had some chairs. They had tables, which I was surprised. That's another one of my bucket list things. I was always, whenever I was growing up, I was always a big fan of table matches, but never really saw anyone go through a table. I never saw it in person. But now I saw three table spots in one match. Alberto Del Rio went through one table, Big Show charged through another one, and then in the match, it was Alberto Del Rio and Big Show on the top rope, both of them just fighting it out on the top rope, and then Alberto Del Rio swings around and gives a bulldog to Big Show from the top and goes through the table. Big Show kicks out, and then Alberto Del Rio takes his hand and then does the arm lock. Same move Ronda Rousey did, actually, to win the title. But Alberto Del Rio won. It was cool to see Ricardo there. Once again, Ricardo took a huge bump. He got slammed out to the side apron. He was on the outside of the deal, and Big Show caught him and just tossed him, and he fucking hit that metal barricade. And I'll tell you what, man, those metal barricades are real metal. Ain't no faking that. Like, I felt them with my own hands. Those are legit. And so big respect for Ricardo Rodriguez. But yeah, it was a fun night. It was a lot of fun. Like I said, we went to a Raw last year. Raw this Monday is in Dallas. We were thinking about getting tickets for that, but I'm still under the weather. Fiance has to work. Can't find anyone to watch the baby. Just didn't work out this time. But it should be a good Raw. But I'm so stoked we got to see a great house show. Got to see the premiere Fandango, the return of Undertaker, Jack Swagger put on a good show, Randy Orton, Cody Rhodes, great stuff. A lot of fun seeing Epico and Primo. You know, just cool stuff. Yeah, and seeing the Divas do their thing, kind of unabated. They get all the time they need. So, great stuff. A lot of fun. If there's an event anywhere near you, if there's a house show anywhere near you, go to it. You never know what's going to happen. And trust me, I'm the one that'll tell you, you don't know what's going to happen. Fucking Undertaker could come back. You never know. But anyways, it was a lot of fun. Let me roll this over a little bit into what my Raw predictions are. The two main things on Raw for this Monday, for tomorrow night. One is the Paul Heyman versus Vince McMahon fight. And I think we all know what's going to happen there. That's going to start, the words are going to be, said between one another. They might start brawling, but Brock Lesnar's going to come out for Paul Heyman. And then Triple H is going to come out, and it's going to start setting up the Triple H versus Brock Lesnar number 2 for WrestleMania. But the big one, and this is where things kind of get interesting, is the main event is John Cena versus CM Punk. Winner takes on The Rock at WrestleMania. Now, what my prediction is that it'll be no contest. Both of them will get counted out. something's going to happen to where they both end up getting the title shot. Or Rock comes out and be like, oh, screw both of you. I'll take both of you on. So I still think, for some reason, I still think it's going to be a three-way dance at Mania for the belt. It'll be the first time since WrestleMania 20 that more than a one-on-one has happened for the belt in the main event. But what a lot of people are saying now, especially because The Undertaker came back, is that, and you know, and I can see this working, is during the match, either Undertaker interrupts the match and threatens CM Punk, or John Cena wins, then CM Punk says, oh, you all don't respect me, this is disrespect. Like, something's gonna happen with a ref. Oh, I can't believe this, you all don't respect me, this is hogwash, how could you? And then the gong hits. An Undertaker's promo consists of, listen, the belt's one thing, but if you want to be respected forever, you would face me at WrestleMania, and you would beat my streak. That's what I would do. If I was writing it, I would make it that. If the one thing CM Punk's talked about his entire career is respect, and what better way to get everybody's respect than beating Taker at WrestleMania? It's a good angle. You know, I think it'd be a good work. But, but, I don't know. Based on how Taker looked, and I can say this from first-hand experience, you know, he looked good. I'm not gonna lie. He did his thing. He did it well. But Sheamus was in a majority of the match. You know, I think this was kind of a trial run for Taker to see how he felt. We might not even hear from Taker on Raw. Last night could have, you know, he could have got done and been like, you know what, I'm not feeling it, I'm not quite ready. And then he saves the big one for WrestleMania 30, which would make sense too. I wouldn't blame him. But then I will tell you, I'll feel super fucking stoked if for some reason he doesn't do WrestleMania and we don't hear from him again for another year. Because, oh, to be at the only appearance of The Undertaker in 2 years, oh man, oh, that'd be rad. No, but I want everyone to see Taker. I love Taker. I'm a huge Taker mark, so. Yeah, those are my predictions for it. I still think that it's gonna be a three-way dance for the belt. Also, another match I would love to see at WrestleMania, besides this, for the World Heavyweight, not the World Heavyweight, what the fuck am I talking about? For the Tag Team Championships, is Team Hell No versus The Shield. I think Seth Rollins, you know, I think all those guys would work really well together, and that'll give Daniel Bryan a shot to have a true WrestleMania moment. Same thing for Kane. Give them a honest-to-God, good, long tag team WrestleMania match. Hell, WrestleMania 28, Kane versus Randy Orton was really good. They did really well. I watched that match about a month ago. I had that Blu-ray, and I watch it every now and again, you know, in its entirety, back whenever they would put Zack Ryder on TV. This was a great match. I was very impressed with that match. And they went, what, for 20 minutes? 20-minute match. You know, Kane pulled out all the stops, and it was just a solid show. And he won over Randy Orton. Solid stuff. But did he win over Randy Orton? No, I don't know. Now I need to rewatch it. But give Kane, Daniel Bryan their shot. The Shield can keep the momentum. This would be a good way for The Shield to win the belts. That way they stay a group, and then Daniel Bryan and Kane split. That way we can get Daniel Bryan back in a belt contendership. Kane can start building his deal. Because here's the deal. I'm going to tell you what my dream match would be for WrestleMania 30. You all are going to make fun of me. I know for a fact you're all going to make fun of me. But I think the only person that should beat Undertaker at WrestleMania is Kane. And I know what you're thinking. Kane's no Shawn Michaels. You know, he's not fucking Ric Flair. He's not the greatest of all time and all this other stuff. But think about what it would mean. If you watch the Elimination Chamber, which, by the way, was a rad as shit pay-per-view. It was really good. You should watch it. The Shield match was fantastic, and the actual Elimination Chamber, where Jack Swagger won, was great. But I will tell you that if at WrestleMania 30 they have Kane versus The Undertaker and Kane wins, I'm going to cry my eyes out. Because even at the Elimination Chamber, speaking of that, Kane did a promo to where he talked about, I've been in this business for over 15 years, Daniel, you know, talking to Daniel Bryan, and I've never had a WrestleMania moment. I've never had one. This has to be my WrestleMania moment. I have to go, I have to win the belt, all this other stuff. But he didn't get it. If he goes to WrestleMania and he beats Taker and Taker retires by his brother Kane, that would seal Kane's entire career. That would make it completely worth it. Because Kane is one of those guys that works his ass off. He's always there. He's always on time. He's always part of every story. He's always on TV. When's the last time you haven't seen Kane on TV? Yet he doesn't get anything for it. He gets no recognition. People just say, oh yeah, Kane, he's just a mid-carder. You know, he does, yeah, sure, his actual in-ring abilities might be kind of here or there, depending on which night you find him on, but man, Kane's a staple. Kane's a staple of WWE. He really is. I remember the night he was revealed in the cage match. Fucking Paul Bearer walks out, yes, 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 and then Kane has the thing, oh, you are my brother. I remember the whole thing. I remember that, and had that look of, like, terror that Undertaker had, like, oh my god, it's Kane. Even Vince McMahon, like, that's gotta be Kane. It's just a historic moment, man. And, you know, I mean, you had Isaac, he played Isaac Yankum, he played Fake Diesel, he played all these people, but he still never had his due. He's never had his time to shine, and he's never had his true moment. You know, he's won the belt, he's won a World Heavyweight Championship, I think once, but he kept it for, what, 2 weeks? He didn't keep it for very long. But if he beats Taker, and that seals Taker's career, and his brother puts him in the grave, so to speak, oh man, that'd be beautiful storytelling. But anyway, that's a wish. That's one of my wishes. I think we're done with the wrestling wrap-up. A lot of fun. We're going to come back. We're going to take your questions. We got some really good ones, some really profound ones. Got some on the PS4, about Diablo 3 going to consoles, about Metroid, about NeoGAF, all sorts of shit. We're going to get to that right after this. Welcome back, guys. Question and answer time. Let's get it rolling. Good buddy Leiter asks, what's the deal with the Iron Sheik and Hulk Hogan? If you guys don't have a Twitter, you should get a Twitter. And first of all, out before anything, you follow me on Twitter. Twitter.com/commie2hobo. But Iron Sheik is on Twitter. And I'll tell you, if you want some belly laughs, follow the Iron Sheik on Twitter. Because he's always talking about how Hulk Hogan fucks goats, and the fucking Hulk Hogan, he'll refer to him as the fucking Hulk Hogan, oh, the Hulk Hogan, you know, sticks up off his ass, like all this other stuff. Hilarious. But I think, you know, Hulk Hogan actually doesn't say anything about Iron Sheik. I think Iron Sheik believes that all of the storylines from the 80s wrestling time were real. You know what I mean? So I think he has this weird vendetta against Hulk Hogan. Or the fucking Hulk Hogan, as Iron Sheik would say. But it's hilarious. Like, I poop on your bed. Like, he says all this dumb stuff. You just gotta go read it. Just follow the Iron Sheik on Twitter. It is hilarious. But that's what I think. I just think it was part of, you know, he just believes, he believes all of it was real. You know. Let's see, Oh, Marco Flores. He has a few comments and then asks his main questions. First of all, he says, the new WWE Championship belt reminds me of the Dragon Star from the World Martial Arts Classics Masters by putting your own emblem on the belt, which is pretty cool. Yeah, The Rock showcased the belt. Whenever The Rock showcased the new belt, I was really hoping it would be the double eagle belt again, like the old school one, you know, that Bret Hart wore, and I was really hoping the double eagle belt would come back, but I guess not. New belt looks nice. The only thing is it looks like a giant oversized class ring. You know how you order like high school class rings? It looks like a big class ring. But hey, looks better than the other one. That fucking spinner's gone at least. Let's see, the best video, this is still Marco Flores by the way, the best video slash demo of the PlayStation 4 conference, and would you have gone with Diablo 3 for Blizzard's return to the consoles? Man, best video and demo of the PS4 conference. And I'm trying to rack my brain on what all of them are. I mean, the Killzone one was technically impressive. I wouldn't say that's the best one. I would say... I think the Watch Dogs demo was pretty cool. You know? I think... I'm trying to think of kind of what all they showed. Let's see, they showed... I'm kind of looking on Giant Bomb right now, sorry for the dead air. Let's see. Weekly Rock Band, Digital Extremes. Yeah, they show, whenever, while I'm looking through all this stuff, I just want to say the controller looks a bit silly to me. I think they're trying to do too much on the controller. I think the thing that makes the Wii U pad and, you know, that type of, in the Wii's design work so well is the controller's dedicated to doing one thing, but it's dedicated to doing one thing really well. I think the PlayStation 4, once again, is trying to be a, Swiss Army knife. You know, and that's, I don't know, that could bite him in the ass. Okay, here we go. Full list of stuff. Knack is the name of that game, the kind of action platformer game, yeah, from Sony's Japan studio, and Mark Cerny. But yeah, Knack was pretty impressive. It really definitely gave me the, PlayStation 1 action-adventure vibes. They showed the new, Infamous Second Son, which I guess it's gonna be Cole's kid, but they'll have to do some weird time travel stuff. They showed Drive Club, and that guy was really into cars. Like, sensually. He was really into cars. Killzone Shadows Fall, of course. The Witness is Jonathan Blow's new game. Deep Down, it was kind of a tech demo. It looked really impressive, but that's the one that kind of had that Dragon's Dogma slash, you know, Dead Souls, Dark Souls feel to it. The only thing I think, and I may be full of it, I think it's a game like Dragon's Lair. I don't think you control the guy all that much. I think you go through the motions, you kind of go on the rails, and then something happens, and then you hide behind something, and you have to wait for your turn to hit the buttons. Like, seriously, for me, it looked like an on-rail shooter, but the guy just runs around. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was lack of the HUD or the weird way the camera was doing stuff, but I was really reminded of Dragon's Lair. And everyone's like, oh, this is the best-looking game I've ever seen. And I was like, well, no one's really playing it. You know, I don't know what it looks like while you're playing the video game. I see, sure, in-engine stuff, and it does look good, but how does it play? Something was off about it. I can't quite put my finger on it. But yeah, I think it was like an on-rails game. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but who knows. They showed Final Fantasy again, whatever that... it was kind of a repeat of the... I guess it was the Tokyo Game Show trailer, but you saw the last half of it from a different perspective than you did. The first perspective, you stayed in the room with that mage whenever he was casting spells or whatever against all this army. But this one, the girl that leaves during the first of it, you actually follow her as she goes over the rooftops and stuff like that. So, showed some stuff. I know they did the new engine. I think they're using the new Unreal 4 engine, which looks pretty good, and it fits that aesthetic really well. Of course, they showed Watch Dogs, yeah. They showed Destiny. And, you know, seeing Bungie at a Sony conference is still weird to me. But I'm glad, you know what? I'm glad Destiny is going to be multi-platform. I'm glad it's kind of their online insurgent steal. I think it's going to play a lot like a Borderlands, or, you know, it's going to be kind of a faux MMO, might play kind of like Global Agenda. What's a Hellgate London, to where you know, you could probably have 8 people in your party or something, and then, because it looks like you can go through portals and go through, you know, different instances and do raids and things like that, but they didn't really talk too many specifics. But I'm thinking it's just going to be a smaller framed MMO. I don't know if it's going to have an economy or anything like that, but it looks pretty fun. I mean, it looks good. It does have a very much a Halo vibe, the way the weapons reload, things like that. But yeah, Destiny looked good. I would say out of all of the stuff that I saw, the one that got me the most excited was Knack. The one that looked the best was Killzone. The one that I'm probably actually going to play is either going to be Destiny or the Final Fantasy, whatever it was, if it ever comes out. Watch Dogs does look good, but I didn't see a whole lot in Watch Dogs that didn't really press the boundaries insofar as, because hell, I have Sleeping Dogs on the PC, and that game looks remarkable. It looks unbelievable. Sleeping Dogs is already out. It looks fantastic. Crysis 3 is out. That game on a high-end PC looks surreal. So Watch Dogs, that seems like a game that I'm definitely going to enjoy whenever I do play it. There's just no rush for me to play it. I would say out of the whole conference, the two games would be Destiny and the Final Fantasy thing. But insofar as the question about Diablo 3, do I think it's a good fit for consoles? Yes, I do. I think that it's a smart move. The reason why I think they're doing it is because they're going to make a lot more money, which is good. I think Diablo 3, it sold a shit ton. It sold a whole bunch of copies. But in hindsight, I don't think it was as successful as they wanted it to be. Not so far as, oh, wait, all these people bought it, but the people that were playing it stopped playing it. You know, there's not a huge, 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 overwhelming amount of people still playing Diablo 3. I think they're trying to get the people that were into Diablo 3 back, because, hey, you can play it on the comfort of your couch. But also people that don't know anything about Diablo, hey, let's get people in, let's get them knowing Blizzard's name. That way down the line, if we want to release more games, we can do that. And hell, this might bode well for Titan, Blizzard's unannounced MMO. They may do cross-platform type stuff. You never know. You really never know with Blizzard. But I think it's a strong presence. I think the Blizzard name still carries a ton of weight. But I hated Diablo 3. I know a lot of my friends hated Diablo 3. We much prefer Path of Exile, Torchlight 2. You know, just Diablo 3, in my opinion, was a mess of a Diablo game. It's not to say it's not a good game. It is. Not a good Diablo game. Not for me. But for a console audience, for people that have never played Diablo, a ton of those people are going to have a fucking blast with that game. And, you know, doing it PS3 and PS4 is going to be cool. Hopefully they're going to find some way to do Battle.net on the PS3 or PS4. Like log in, that way I can chat with friends and stuff like that. It'd be cool. But it's kind of a big deal. Yeah. Let's see. Marco Flores also asked his last question. Recently seeing Lara Croft's training montage on TV, what would be your montage song, and what training exercises would it have? Well, the exercises, it would be some martial arts, a little bit of cardio. You know, I'd have the headband on. Be some compound lifts, like some clean and presses. You know, picking up some dumbbells and shit, doing some deadlifts. You know, just sweating buckets, man. Doing those, the chest flies, but the chest flies with the free roam machine, where you see like Arnold, where he does the flexing and he has the cables, you know, the cable chest flies, where he's like, ugh, and he's like bliss out of his mind. I would do that. And as far as the song, I actually know the song, and it's this song right here. Jake! See what I mean? That makes you feel like $1 million. You know what I'm saying? Ah, oh, so good. So good. But thank you. Thank you, Marco, for the awesome questions. Let's see. Got a lot of questions on Undertaker. How was Undertaker? Did he look good? Do you think he's ready for WrestleMania? Personally, I don't think he's ready for WrestleMania, but if it is him versus CM Punk, I think Punk could hold his end of the bargain. I think Punk could make it look like Taker was ready. You know what I mean? That's just how good CM Punk is. CM Punk can make anyone look like the best in the world. Undertaker is one of the best in the world, but it's a much different style. But I do think that I think CM Punk could bring out the Undertaker that we saw versus Shawn Michaels. I think we could. And that's even if CM Punk did a majority of the stuff. But do I think he's ready for WrestleMania 29? No. I think he should recover more. I think he should do a few more appearances to really hype up WrestleMania 30 as his last hurrah. But that's my opinion. Kyle Warren. Yackle. My bro. Hope Kate's doing well, my friend. Kyle Warren asks, should Carl Urban be the next Batman? Yeah, I could see it. As long as he doesn't do that look that he does with a... He has the same look. I don't know if it's just his face, but he has the same look in Star Trek that he did in Lord of the Rings as one of the writers of Rohan, where he has that kind of Keira Knightley, mouth open, look out of the corner of your eye. I just don't know how that'd look in a Batman outfit. You know what I mean? Be kind of silly. Kind of a duh. Silly look. Let's see. Good friend Cody Dunn, good friend of the show, asked three questions, actually. First one, how hilarious would it be if Sega sues Gearbox? Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. Apparently, Aliens Colonial Marines didn't do so hot. Sega canceled the game. Gearbox rebought the rights. Wanted to make the game. Released the game. It was shit. Which is why Sega fucking canceled in the first place. Now there's some weird lawsuit stuff going on. I don't know. This seems like upper/middle management tomfoolery. I feel bad for the people that had to work on the game, because apparently they didn't have a lot of good support, things like that. They just kind of had to roll with the punches. And I mean, Randy Pitchford, he knows how to direct a studio. I mean, Borderlands 1 and 2, you know, they're not my favorite games in the world, but they're at least serviceable. They're good games. Duke Nukem Forever is what it is. But Aliens Colonial Marines was just fucked up. I don't know what happened. But should they sue them? I don't know. I think everyone should just swallow it and move on. Just forget it existed and better luck next time. Also, Cody Dunn asks, how would you feel about posting in NeoGAF? I want to stay as far away from NeoGAF as humanly possible, because the people in there are some of the densest, dumbest people. You got some really smart people. Nitrobeard's own Imran Khan is laying it down at NeoGAF. He's kind of our NeoGAF presence on Nitrobeard, and couldn't ask for a better one because he actually knows his shit. He'll call people out on dumb bullshit, and apparently he's one of the most hated guys on GAF. But I guess it's because he's a rational human being that has a personality and has good opinions. So, yeah, of course he'd be hated on GAF. You know, that goes against everything they stand for on GAF. Everything's a weird system wars mentality. I'm better than you, this. No, it's like, that's semantics. You know, the big mouths have closed minds, I think Confucius once said. But, yeah, NeoGAF is just an attention whore getaway. Just people who are missing the point. I think that's the best way I can put it. NeoGAF is a place where people miss the point. Primarily. I'm not speaking for everyone, of course, not all 400 billion people or whatever, but a majority of them, the vocal minority, as it were, some of the worst people on the internet. I'll put them as a worse ranking than 4chan or Reddit, as quote-unquote scum of the internet. I'll put them in the same likes. But then, and the final question from Cody Dunn. This is a good one. If it were up to you to reboot Metroid, how would you do it, and would you release it on the 3DS or the Wii U? First off, I would do it on the Wii U. I think there's more opportunity there. I think, with the touchpad. Just the Wii U is a smart piece of machinery. You know, I don't think I'm going to buy a Wii U simply because I haven't seen enough that is going to drive me to purchase a whole bunch of Wii U games, at least not now. Like I said, down the line, 5 years from now, who knows? I could get one on the cheap, play the next Xenoblade, all that good stuff. But, excuse me, but I'd make it for the Wii U. And my dream game, if I were to reboot it, I would put a big team, do a two-dimensional, well, and I, you know, 3D, it would be polygons, but it would be on a 2D plane, do an actual Metroid, like Super Metroid-style game, but just use the capacity, use the amount of content, kind of make it a thank you for Metroid players, have a lot of unlockable stuff, have unlockable outfits, for Samus, have online, not necessarily co-op. I mean, you could, but I think what made Super Metroid so beautiful of a game, one of the best games ever made, is the solitude. You're by yourself. You and Samus, that's it. You're going through this entire alien world, you're going through these ships, you're going through these different locales, and it's lonely. And I think that's what makes Metroid work so well, is Samus is doing this, you know, she's on her own, and you're there to guide her. So I don't think doing co-op and doing all that stuff would actually add to anything. I think adding some sort of support, like time attack leaderboards, you know, maybe even doing like some sort of weapon upgrade system. You know, but the thing about Metroid is you don't want to stray too far from what makes it so good. And it's so good because it's so simple. That all Nintendo games are like that. Nintendo is beautiful because they make such simple games. But those games are timeless because there's no season for them, right? It's not a, you know, hell, I wouldn't even call Metroid Prime a first-person shooter. It's so different, you know? So it's gonna last far after the whole first-person shooter craze goes away. You know, I think, honestly, the first-person shooter craze is starting to die down right now. I think next gen is going to be the gen where, yeah, we see them do a bunch of bells and whistles, but then there's going to be another genre that comes and takes up the slack. But that's neither here nor there. But Metroid, I would keep it as simple as possible. I would make it look gorgeous. I would have it use all the Wii U's online functionalities, the message boards. You can record your own videos, like walkthroughs. I would definitely make it a big game, a very big game, with a bestiary, kind of a, you know, almost like a museum. Like, have you unlock stuff whenever you see certain things, whenever you get certain story elements, you know. Yeah, it'd be kind of a love letter, if you will, you know, to Metroid fans. But that's what I would do. Will it ever happen? Probably not. But I think it'd be really rad to do it that way. But let's see. I know we had a few other questions. Oh yeah, Mark Bradshaw asks one. Which kind of goes back to the, NeoGAF stuff. He was like, how awesome. Yeah, and this is in all caps, but I can't scream. My throat's still rough. But how awesome is GDDR5? If you're not running DDR5, you might as well punch yourself in the dick. And for those that don't know, GDDR is the type of RAM that's in the PlayStation 4. And, you know, people talking about, oh, it's the fastest on the market. It's the fastest ever made. Oh, it's just so fast. All this stuff. Yeah, sure. But PlayStation 3 was really, really good as far as technology is concerned, but you couldn't really fucking develop for it. Not for the first 3 years it was a system. Because nobody knew what to do with a cell processor. Nobody knew. Nobody knew. Same thing with the PS2. Nobody knew how to use the motion engine. No. Because Sony makes technically impressive infrastructures that are completely not applicable to making video games. You know, people learn. Developers are, you know, paid to figure out this tech, so hopefully this is going to make it easier. But yeah, putting all the bells and whistles, yeah, it's going to make the developer's job easier to a certain extent. But then if the infrastructures for each system are so different, then you're not going to see as many games being made, because then it's going to take more money and more manpower to port one game, you know, or to make a multiple platform game. You know, but I do think the new Xbox is going to have very similar specs. I think they're going to be different insofar as maybe how the memory is used, because PlayStation 4, you know, Sony said that it's using unified memory. For people that don't know that, unified memory is the memory is shared between not only running the functions of the system, but it's also running the functions of the graphics processor. So, sure, you could have 8 gigs of the fastest memory in the world, but if you split it in half, what, you know, 4 gigs going to the graphics, 4 gigs running the system, then, you know, at that point, you're not too far ahead of where PCs are right now. You know. But yeah, kind of silly. But that looks to be about it. Let me do one last check. Switch Gearbox. Yeah. That looks about it. Great questions, guys. A lot of fun. Hopefully I didn't piss off too many people about NeoGAF. But, a lot of fun. Hopefully this episode made up for last week not being here. I know I may have been kind of squirrely brained this week, but it's all this medicine I'm taking, guys. Feeling better, doing better. Hopefully you guys are doing well out there too. But yeah, if you do get sick, go get some of that Mucinex, man. Get that Mucinex. It's in the bottle. It's like $15. It's expensive, but it's worth it. It works. But hopefully we'll see what happens on Raw tomorrow night. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/callmetohobo. You can also follow me on Facebook. I don't post there as much, but you know, why not? facebook.com/callmetohobo. Visit me there. Of course, lock it on to nitrobeer.com. We got some great stuff on the front page. Damien Harris did a guest editorial for Dead Space 3. We got some trailers. We got some cool stuff up there. A lot of writing, a lot of editorials coming your way. I'm working on some stuff right now. Don't know how big it'll be, but I think one of them's going to be a PSP retrospective. Kind of a fun deal. But I need to get over this, whatever this is, first. I need to get my bearings straight before I start writing stuff. Posting it on the World Wide Web. But radio's a bit different, you know what I mean? But anyway, that's it for this week. Hope you guys had a blast. I always have a blast. Thank you for the questions. Hopefully answered them to your specifications. But of course, comment on this episode. Also, send me the questions on Twitter. I'll answer them every single week. You know that. I'm here for you guys. Follow me. Twitter.com/comedyhobo. Go on iTunes. Search for Power Hour. Go listen to Free to Play. Go listen to the Jumpcast. NitroBeer.com. We're here for you. And until next time, be sure to power up.